The Corridor is an award-winning news program hosted by Dinah Jansen and Jesse Bell, airing every Thursday at 5 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM. With contributions from local Journalism Initiative reporters ranging from Morrisburg to Coburg, The Corridor is your premier destination for truly local news that matters to you. The Corridor is also available as a podcast on all major podcast streaming platforms.
Good evening. It is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's News Collective, Christina Laurie, Jesse Bell, Lauren Tucker, and Dinah Jansen. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. Open Farm Days has returned for its second full season after going from a weekend celebration to a full lineup of events lasting from mid-August to the end of September. Open Farm Days offers Kingstonians an opportunity to learn about local agriculture, from tours of local farms to culinary workshops. This summer, the lineup also has an exciting new addition called Gather, bringing together a wide array of local farmers, food producers, and chefs for a farm-to-table experience. Gather was spearheaded by the owner of Bloom Farm, Tara Williamson, and chef and owner of Rampant Kitchen, Elisa Corrigan. On September 14th, they will be hosting a day filled with delicious food, local vendors, and a celebration of community. Visitors will tour eight different stations offering food and drink pairings with ingredients from different local farms. CFRC sat down with Debbie Miller, an organizer with Open Farm Days, to talk about this year's offerings and get a sneak preview of Gather before sitting down with the event's hosts. This is your only second year doing the longer version of the festival as opposed to just that one weekend. How is the process of filling out the schedule this year?
It's going really well. There's been a lot of enthusiasm and a lot of interest around Open Farm Days. As we've expanded the time frame to allow for more local farms, businesses, and community organizations to be involved, because as we all know, harvest for everything doesn't happen at the same time. So expanding the time frame has really allowed for more participation and opportunities to be involved.
Awesome. Yeah. And what kind of feedback did you get from last year's longer event, and how has it changed your approach to this year?
Yeah, so we did receive positive feedback about the longer time frame because it allowed other locations to be involved, as I indicated. But it really has expanded the opportunities, also the awareness too for the connections within farming and food in our region it's just an increased awareness across the region, an opportunity for others to make connections and really get to know where your food comes from and who's preparing your food or producing food for you as well is a really important part around the small-scale agriculture for sure. Thank you.
Yeah, that's awesome. And did you have a lot of new participants this year, or was it a similar number of participants to last year?
There's a similar number. There's a few new locations that are participating and others that, you know, just for different reasons were not able to participate this year. So I would say a fairly similar number. We did focus a lot this year on the farmers markets and really making good connections at the farmers markets, and they're hosting events there as well, so educational events. So again, bringing people to where people already are, bringing events and awareness to those locations, like at the farmers markets there's tomato tastings or bloom bars or different events like that that are taking place at the five farmers markets across our region.
Yeah, so was that a big focus this year, was getting connected with those farmers markets and making sure that Open Farms had a voice there?
Yes, absolutely. And they have been involved in the past, but it was really how do they also connect? Because as we know, people go to farmers markets for their weekly grocery shopping, products and things like that, picking up their local vegetables and fruit, their baked goods, etc. And just really trying to make sure people were aware across our region that but there are five amazing farmers markets in our region. So if you aren't able to make a Saturday one, you can make a Sunday one, or you can go Friday night or a different day during the week. So there's lots of opportunities with different times and different locations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's awesome. And things have already kicked off. What have you heard so far from the community, and how have you been feeling about this year so far?
Thank you for that. And yes, we had the launch event on Friday, August 16th. There was a great turnout there. Lots of community members were out. We had local politicians were out to support the event and support small-scale agriculture in our community. They all helped with the ribbon cutting, which was a corn stalk, which was a pretty fun ribbon cutting. So good positive feedback as we start the event, and lots of interest as people are visiting the website to explore what's happening and what's taking place in the next 6 weeks across our region.
Awesome stuff. Yeah. And just to give us a bit of a preview, this new event, Gather, how did they come into the picture and what's it all about?
So Gather is an event that's being hosted at a farm in Frontenac County with a chef doing the preparation of the food, and they're having different booths around the farm where they can, sample different offerings from different farms as well. So a new event that's taking place. But again, Tara is well-versed in open farm days. She's been involved from the Frontenac Farmers Market perspective, and she is also a farmer. So it's great to have them involved. There's lots of other events taking place as well, culinary events. There's the Donald Gordon Conference Center has a culinary event this weekend on August 24th, and there's the food tours. There's other events taking place, so be sure to check out openfarmdays.ca to see the full list of events taking place.
Once again, that was Debbie Miller sitting down with CFRC to get into this year's Open Farm Days experiences. Next up, we sat down with Gather organizers Tara Williamson and Elisa Corrigan to get deeper into this year's new event taking place at Bloom Farm.
Well, to start us off, would you like to just introduce yourself for our listeners?
Sure. So I am Tara Williamson. I am owner-operator of Bloom Farm in Harrow Smith.
And my name is Elisa Corrigan, and I am chef and owner of Rampy Kitchen, and we're opening a cooking studio just south of Sydenham.
Awesome, yeah. And this is the first time the Gather event is in this Open Farms lineup. I was wondering if you could speak a bit to how this partnership happened between Rampy Kitchen and Bloom Farms, and what people can expect from the event this year.
So I have been a patron of Open Farm Days for a number of years. I think it's a fantastic event, and have sort of always had in the back of my mind that we would do some sort of event at Bloom Farms, but wasn't quite sure what that event would be until one day I tasted Elisa's food, and we didn't really know each other. I knew of her, but I didn't know her. But as soon as I had her food, I said, I need to meet this woman. I need to do an event with her. And Gather was born out of that.
I believe the lore is it was a raspberry Danish.
It was.
Yeah, I've been looking for an excuse to squeak into Open Farms. I moved to the area just over 2 years ago, and every year I've been a visitor of Open Farms and really loved it and loved like the philosophy of it. Like, food and sustainable food systems are really important to me. So when Tara messaged me over a Danish, I was like, yep, let's do this. Let's just jump into it.
Yeah, that's awesome. And since you guys experienced this firsthand, I was wondering if you could speak a bit to the importance of the connections that are fostered between local farms and local kitchens by these events like Open Farms.
Sure. So I'm also actually the manager of the Frontenac Farmers Market. So I'm very entwined in both farmers and food in the area. And I think education of where our food comes from and the people growing it is so important. And having people like Elisa and Rampant Kitchen in the area to show what you can do with the local ingredients available to us is incredible. And we're so lucky to have so many farmers in the area and food producers.
Yeah. So sustainable food systems has always been really important to me as a chef. I'm from a rural farming community in Southern Ontario. And then when I worked in Toronto for the past 2 decades, it was always part of my ethos when I was building menus to focus on Ontario food. I'm all about like global taste and local flavors. So when I met Tara and she had all these wonderful connections with farmers already, it was like this beautiful open door to like really show off what we can produce in Frontenac. And it's just really exciting.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I know the event is a little while away, but do you have an idea of what you'll be showing folks how to make come September 14th?
Yeah, we have the menu pretty solidified. I'm just working out some kinks, but we're going to be doing some really cool stuff like the Rise Farm is participating and they have great small fowl and they also raise rabbits. So we're going to be doing like a smoked jerk chicken, like jerk rabbit with like a nectarine salsa on the side. We're also working with Collective Joy and they're this amazing microgreen interior farm down in Kingston. And we're using two of their products. We're going to be using microgreens on one of our dishes. We're doing like a lion's mane taco with Mark's mushrooms. But then we're also going to be using their beautiful florals and we're going to imprint them into some butter shortbread. So everybody gets like a sweet floral treat at the end.
We also have some incredible, food producers too. We have chocolate, we have pickles, we have breads. So you'll be able to sample lots of different food producers in the area. And an event like this would not be complete without some beer and wine tastings too. So we have a local brewery and winery on site. And with your ticket purchase, you get to sample their products as well.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. So is Gather a newer event on a bigger level? Because I know Open Farms, like folks will go visit a farm and figure out what they do there. But it sounds like a lot of people are getting involved in this one.
Yeah, it was really important for us to bring together a lot of farmers for this event. So basically one-stop shopping. You can come to Gather and meet a wide array of farmers and food producers in the area. And each farmer and food producer will be on site the day of to talk about their farms, talk about their products, answer any questions. So it's a great event, whether you're just coming to eat and drink and enjoy and network, or if you're thinking about starting your own little farm or just want to know more about what's available in the area.
Really about food community.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely being very true to the name Gather. That's awesome. Yeah. And I mean, both of you have watched the festival grow over the years and participated in different ways. And I was wondering if you could just get into how it's been to watch the festival go from the weekend to virtual during COVID to back to the weekend to now being this whole month and a half event. And so many people are involved that you can host an event like Gather.
Yeah, I think it's great. I think the team at Frontenac County and the specifically the Open Farm Days team have done a great great job at making Open Farm Days really accessible to everybody, all different price points. Some events are free, some are not. You can come to an event like ours and hit a bunch of different farmers at once, go to farmers market. So it really is, you can get whatever you want at Open Farm Days, which is incredible. So hats off to the team there.
Yeah, they're really putting in a lot of grassroots effort to like spread the word and make it a big thing, which is awesome.
Yeah, for sure. And it's coming up really fast. So how are you guys feeling with the big day approaching so quickly?
I'm definitely excited. I'm also a little nervous, but I think a little nerves is good. Yeah, I think it'll be really great. And I think it's great in my mind. And I don't want to speak for Tara, but I think once we have it in action, it'll be like this beautiful sigh of relief to see everything come to fruition.
Yeah, it's going to be a blast. I'm excited.
That was Tara Williamson and Elisa Corrigan, organizers of the new Gather event for Open Farm Days this year. Gather will be taking place on September 14th from 3 to 7 p.m. More details are available at openfarms.ca. That wraps up your headlines for this evening. Next up is Lauren Tucker with your CFRC Arts Desk.
Thanks, Christina. Here's your arts and culture news for today. Beginning September 3rd and running until the 14th at the Union Gallery is home again, Queen's Fine Art Alumni Exhibit. Marking 55 years of fine art education at Queen's, this exhibition of visual artwork from fine arts and art education alumni will be a showcase, celebration, and an expression of the hopes for the future of the program. This exhibition includes work from over 70 alumni and is free for the public to peruse during open hours in the main space. Exhibition hours may vary, and you can learn more at uniongallery.queensu.ca. coming up at the Agnes Hetherington Art Center is a week of orientation events lined up from September 16th to 21st. On September 16th from 2 to 4 p.m. is a sound-making workshop with acclaimed music collaborative, LAL. As a bonus to this event, tickets to this group's performance the following evening are available for a sliding scale $10 to $20 admission. On September 20th from 4 to 8 p.m. in conjunction with the Union Gallery is the Queer Karaoke Dance Party. On September 21st is a workshop for educators of all kinds from 1 to 4 p.m. illustrating a no borders approach to teaching and teaching cross-cultural relations and solidarity. Last but certainly not least, on the 21st of September is a screening of the new A Fadai film based on the destruction of Palestinian archives that, quote, aims to create a counter-narrative to this loss, presenting a form of cinematic sabotage that seeks to reclaim and restore the looted memory of Palestinian history. All of these events are free to attend, but registration is required, and you can learn more at agnes.queensu.ca. Registration for fall term programming at the Kingston School of Art is now open, including programs for youth and adults, as well as workshops and summer camps. This includes adult classes in drawing, fiber and textile arts, mixed media, painting, printmaking, and sculpture, and youth programs for kids ages 6 to 16 and families. There are also a variety of 1 and 2 day workshops available for registration. For more information and to register, visit ksoa.info. Coming up at Modern Fuel are 3 new exhibitions beginning September 14th and running until November 9th. In the main gallery is In the Shadow of the Sun by regional artist Alyssa Scott. In the State of Flux gallery is A Common Babble by extra-regional artist Nikita FK. And in the Window gallery is Artwork Care Work, Portraits of Artists / Mothers by extra-regional artist Claire Drummond. For more, visit modernfuel.org. And the full lineup is now available for Kingston Writers Fest 2024, running this year at the Screening Room and across Kingston from September 25th to 29th. This year's program includes events for adult writers and youth, including panels, trivia, open mics, writers' retreat events, festival field trips, and more. Tickets and packages are on sale now, and the student rush seats are available to some events. You can visit kingstonwritersfest.ca for all that and more. Every Monday at Daft Brewing, Bon Evans hosts Music Trivia Mondays at 7 p.m. Put your music knowledge to the test in 4 more rounds of trivia, whether you're going it solo or in a team with clips, questions, and more. The winning team walks away at the end of the night with a $50 gift card and bragging rights, so be sure to check it out for a Monday night of music and fun. And coming up at Kingston's Independent Cinema, The Screening Room, you can catch special screenings of Coraline in its 15th anniversary until September 5th. 2006's Little Miss Sunshine will be showing until the 4th, and Ghostbusters will be showing the 2nd, 3rd, and 5th. The results of their 2024 Moviegoers poll are also now available at their website, so you can keep an eye on which classic winning films are incoming to the big screen. There are also new arrivals and special screenings all the time, so be sure to check back at screeningroomkingston.com for all of your cinema adventures. That's all I've got for you on Arts Desk for today. Now I'll turn it over to Jesse Bell at the Sports Desk.
The Queens Gaels football team was in action on Saturday for their home opener against the McMaster Marauders at Richardson Memorial Stadium. The Gaels were in control of all three facets of the game early, with their special teams unit yielding consistently good return yardage, their defense stifling a potent MAC offense, and the Queens offense putting up 2 touchdowns in the first quarter and a field goal to give them a 17-0 lead. That lead would only grow as Jared Kasari scored his 3rd touchdown of the first half, put the Gaels up 24-0. McMaster would rally with an interception on defense and a late touchdown to make it a 24-7 deficit at the end of the first half. McMaster came out hot in the second half, slowly but surely chipping away at Queen's massive lead. They would add a touchdown to make it a 24-15 ball game before Tyler Mullen would kick a 42-yard field goal through the uprights to give the Gaels a double-digit 27-15 lead. McMaster was undeterred as they continued to chip away at the Queen's lead. McMaster would score a 5-yard touchdown on a jet sweep to drop the deficit to 5 with all the momentum in their favor. A quick stop by the McMaster defense gave the Marauders 1 final chance to win the game with less than a minute to go, but Justin Pace would make this phenomenal play to seal the victory for the Gaels.
Looking for the pass on the right-hand side. Oh, snap! He's taken, but he makes the pass! He has to make his way up. Fumble! Queens gets it! There we go!
Justin Pace, his 2nd generated turnover, and that might be the dagger! Keegan Hall takes 1 heck of a hit. He completes the pass, and Justin Pace, with his face in the right place, knocks that football loose and might have knocked Mac back to Hamilton with an 0-2 record.
And with that defensive play by number 44, Justin Pace, the Gaels would prevail, taking home their first victory of the season 27-22 over a very strong McMaster Marauders football team. The Gaels will be in action next on Saturday, September 7th at Richardson Memorial Stadium, where they'll be hosting the York Lions. Kickoff is scheduled for 4 p.m., but do tune in at 3:45 p.m. for the Something in the Water pregame show. On Saturday, September 7th, the Queens Gaels will host the York Lions at Richardson Memorial Stadium. Last year, Queens walked into York Stadium and left with a resounding, historic victory. But this is not the same program we saw 1 year ago. A new era is dawning at York University. A new coach, new players, and new culture has restored the roar. A team that once fought just to survive is once again playing with pride. Now the Lions will look to even the score. Can York record their first ever victory against the Gaels? Or will Queens continue their royal rule over the Lions? Tune in to CFRC 101.9 FM or CFRC.ca to catch all the bone-crunching action. 2:45 pregame show, 3 p.m. kickoff. We hope to see you there.
Thank you so much. And now it's time for the CFRC Community Concerts and Events Calendar. Have a concert or event you would like listed on our airwaves and on our website? Drop us a line at cfrc.ca. On Monday, September 2nd, you can head on over to the Cove Inn from 5 to 8 p.m. to enjoy music by Cameron Wyatt, the lead guitarist and vocalist for local band Casador. On Tuesday, September 3rd, Eric Urin and Megan Ballow are playing live music by donation at the Cove Inn from 5 to 10 p.m. And also on Tuesday, The Buckle welcomes Courtney Kane for some live country music from 8 to 11 p.m. On Wednesday, September 4th, folks can also enjoy a free open mic show at the Cove Inn with Sean McCullough and friends. You can also travel on the new Wolf Islander 4 to Marysville and enjoy an open mic night with Mike Rapkins at Hotel Wolf Island from 7 to 10 p.m. for free and take in music, poetry, storytelling, comedy, dance, and more. Musique Cafe also welcomes Frank Ryan on September 4th for a live show starting at 8 p.m. on Wednesday night, while folks can also have some karaoke fun at the Mansion starting at 9 p.m. On Thursday, September 5th, from 8:30 to midnight, dive in for the Royal Jam, a free multi-genre open mic event at Blue Martini. Also on September 5th, Clear Breeze will perform groove-oriented jazz and bossa nova classics at Hotel Wolf Island for free from 6 to 10 p.m. And on Thursday as well, Stage Rage is on at Stages Nightclub starting at 9 p.m. On Friday, September 6th, you can check out Red Compass Rose and Rev Zed for only $6 at the Mansion from 7 p.m. till midnight. You can also catch Nison and Bad Fortune in concert at the Memorial Center for free during the Kingston Ribfest and Craft Beer Show from 4:30 to 9 p.m. The Celtic Kitchen Party are also playing a free show at Tiernanog on September 6th from 9 p.m. to midnight, featuring lots of great Celtic, Irish, and Scottish music covers and originals. And Christopher Jackson and friends are playing upbeat rock and old country tunes for free from 7 to 10 p.m. at Blue Martini. On Saturday, September 7th, get ready to stomp it out on the Broom Factory's dance floor with the return of Elliot Brood. Visit Flying V Productions for ticket info for the show, running 7:30 to 10 p.m. Also on the 7th, the Free Association Blues Band featuring Mike Farrell, Spencer Evans, Ian Woodward, Bones Bowering, and Scott Meganson will take place at Hotel Wolf Island for free from 6 to 9 p.m. And the Celtic Kitchen Party with the Tone Cats are taking the stage on Saturday night at Kingston Ribfest at the Memorial Center, a free show starting at 4:30. And on Sunday, September 8th, local legends Chris and Dee are playing a free show with Ray Spoon at Hotel Wolf Island from 3:30 to 6:30 p.m. Also on Sunday, you can check out Heavy Pocket and Frank Ryan for free at Ribfest at the Memorial Center from 4:30 to 6 p.m. And that night, The Real McKenzies, Doghouse Rose, Pound Salt, and Left on Bowery are playing a big show from 7:30 to midnight at the Mansion. Tickets are $25.
Thank you. Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What Will I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University, situated on the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of the Faculty of Engineering and Applied Science.
you know that New Leaf Link offers day programming for adults with developmental disabilities? We serve families in Kingston and South Frontenac. Our program focuses on arts, healthy living, and community connections, including summer camp. New Leaf Link's caring staff and talented instructors provide a place for everyone to learn together and build friendships. If you or someone you know would like to join our program, please visit newleaflink.ca for more details. Together, we can grow, connect, and belong.
Your true, true friend loves you just as you are.
The Corridor is an award-winning news program hosted by Dinah Jansen and Jesse Bell, airing every Thursday at 5 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM. With contributions from local Journalism Initiative reporters ranging from Morrisburg to Coburg, The Corridor is your premier destination for truly local news that matters to you. The Corridor is also available as a podcast on all major podcast streaming platforms.
This is CFRC 101.9 FM, your campus and community radio station, broadcast from the basement of Kerutas Hall, Queen's University, Kingston. You can also hear this program locally on Cogeco Cable, channel 282, and is streamed online at cfrc.ca.
Welcome to Biotech Beat. This is your host, Chris Roth. Today we will hear a panel discussing the topic, Understanding Nature's Ledger. This program was produced and distributed by World Economic Forum. Before that, a few messages.
Tree Canada's National Greening Program is planting seedlings across five regions of the country: BC, the Prairies, Ontario, Quebec, and the Atlantic. They plant in areas that are in need of reforestation or afforestation across Canada. Tree Canada selects sites where appropriate native species will be planted to make sure that natural forests come back to life. To learn more or to get involved, go to treecanada.ca.
I faced it. I have Alzheimer's disease.
My diagnosis has let me get on with my life my way.
The more we learned about my grandfather's dementia, the more we could face the future and make plans.
My husband, Tom, and I spoke to our doctor right away.
I have Alzheimer's, but it doesn't have me.
I faced it. So can you.
For more information about early diagnosis, visit alzheimer.ca.
CFRC is active on every social media platform. Check us out at CFRC Radio on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, and on Twitter at CFRC.
Hello, and welcome to all of you to this session entitled Understanding Nature's Ledger. During the session, we will emphasize the need to move beyond current economic indicators to mainstream natural capital in decision-making. My name is Magdalena Skipper, and I am editor-in-chief of Nature, which is the world's most cited science journal. And while most of what we publish is original research across all disciplines, part of our remit is also to amplify the role of research in policy and decision making. And so unsurprisingly, we have written extensively about the need for proper accounting for ecosystems services. While global GDP has soared in recent decades, this economic growth and raising living standards have come at a significant cost to nature. The Dasgupta Review on Economics of Biodiversity, commissioned by the UK government, estimated that between 1992 and 2014, the stock of natural capital per person declined by nearly 40%, while produced capital per person doubled and human capital per person increased by about 13% globally. The trouble is that current economic models do not incentivize the protection, maintenance, or enhancement of natural capital. Simply put, natural capital is not assigned a sufficient role in decision making in a global economy that prioritizes, that economy continues to prioritize economic and financial indicators such as GDP, profits, and cost efficiency. These, of course, do matter. They remain critical to drive growth, but nature remains the foundation on which this growth is built. And so, for example, the World Economic Forum previously identified that of global GDP, that half of global GDP is moderately or highly dependent on nature. Thus, valuing economic models that prioritize assets such as clean water, clean air, nutritious food, human well-being is imperative. The good news, there is good news, is that there are coordinated international efforts to expand beyond the traditional concepts of capital and profit. These include, for example, gross ecosystems product, GEP, which was pioneered in China, the UN system of environmental economic accounting, the capital's coalition's natural capital protocol, and guidance issued by the Task Force on Nature-related Financial Disclosures. And the World Economic Forum has recently begun to explore ways of mainstreaming natural capital. We will be discussing all of these issues, and I have a magnificent panel to lead us through the many aspects of this important issue. I will introduce them starting here on my left. We have Lindsay Hooper, who is Chief Executive Officer at the Cambridge Institute for Sustainable Leadership. We have Minister Jeevan Tonderman, who's Minister of Water Supply and Estate Infrastructure Development of Sri Lanka. We then have, the seats have changed, so we then have Mr. Song Changping, Deputy Director General, Department of Resource Conservation and Environmental Protection at National Development and Reform Commission, the People's Republic of China. We then have Catherine Gao, who's Executive Director at Trina Solar. Last, but definitely not least, we have Mr. Li Pengcheng, Executive President at China Mingyu Dairy. He's also co-chair of this annual meeting of the new champions. So let me start with you, Lindsay. Help us conceptualize the natural capital. Why does it matter for the economy? And how can integrating the value of natural assets improve decision making?
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. And you've already set the scene wonderfully there. So I will try to build on that and bring some of that to life. When we talk about capital, we tend to think only about financial capital, about cash, financial assets, but we know that's not the only value on which our economies depend. We know that every aspect of, every part of the economy is fundamentally dependent on nature, as you highlighted. The air that we breathe, the water we drink, the soil, the oceans that we need for the food that we need to consume, the minerals that we need as inputs to technology and to infrastructure. And without these forms of value, these forms of natural capital, we won't have economies. They are the fundamental building blocks of our economies. But the ways, as you said, the ways in which we have grown our economies, our models of economic development, have been incredibly successful for global prosperity. But the unintended consequences of current models of growth are simply not sustainable on a finite planet. the amount of resource that we are drawing into our economies, Earth's resources, and the amount of pollution and waste that we're pumping out, whether that's through greenhouse gas emissions, whether that's sewage into our water, whether it's plastics into the ocean, is beyond the Earth's carrying capacity. And we know that that's leading, as you said, to very significant direct impacts for society, but very significant financial costs for the economy. You can look at that as you have and calculate that at a macro level. But the way that that's showing up as we're breaching these boundaries and breaching these limits and undermining nature is showing up in very practical ways that are showing up for financial risk for institutions. Lack of water is leading to disruption of operations, of supply chains where water is needed as an essential input for manufacturing or power production. The degradation of soil is leading to reduced agricultural yields. The decline of pollinator species is also having an impact on agriculture. So that's leading to direct financial risks for organizations, for businesses, and ultimately for investors. And as you said, ultimately the reason for this is at the moment the way that decisions are made on an everyday level within businesses and financial institutions is because we're looking only at financial data, financial metrics that are not factoring in nature. Nature is treated within the economy as though it's unlimited and predominantly as though it's free. And the risks and harms are simply not costed in financial terms. We can cost them at a macro level. They're not costed into day-to-day decision making. And the result is, as a consequence, we've put all of our economies at fundamental risk. We can't do business on a dead planet. If we're going to protect natural systems, one of the solutions is to bring nature onto the balance sheet, to bring nature into the ways that decisions are made within business, to allocate a value to it and to bring it into accounting and financial mechanisms. You also asked about how that will lead to better decision making. I think it's just good business. It's just about good long-term value creation, and importantly, it's about resilience for the long term. It's about moving from a landscape of growing risk to more resilient organizations. And businesses, investors, by better mapping, assessing, integrating that understanding of their dependencies and associated risks, the impacts and associated risks, can make better decision making to protect themselves, position themselves for the future. But I think it's important to note that simply bringing it into accounting and having better understanding won't automatically lead to better decision making. Business decision making is not affected only by their own assessment of risk, it's also by the regulatory landscape that they're in and by the market signals. Many of the leading businesses that we work with are between a rock and a hard place. They've got direct risks from nature affecting them. They know that they need to shift. They've got increasing pressure to disclose some of those risks. Their stakeholders, their staff, their customers would love them to be shifting, and a lot of them know what it would take. But the challenge is, at the moment, it's predominantly voluntary. If they take action and bear the costs of transition that their competitors aren't, they risk being punished in the markets for absorbing those costs. So they need markets to be tilted, so they're no longer having to take a trade-off between short-term commerciality and protecting themselves against long-term nature risks. There's a need for action by government and by financial markets alongside business so that capital is directed to activity that's good for nature and away from business that's fundamentally damaging the planet.
Thank you very much, Lindsay. That was a really wonderful, wonderful introduction to really kick us off. You touched on so many points. The things I just want to particularly highlight for perhaps future discussion, but also for all of you to be thinking about questions, because there will be time for questions from the floor. You so wonderfully illustrated how complex this issue is, that we really need to think from a systems perspective. There are so many aspects that feed into our imperfect way of really accounting and doing business, and what the benefits
the manifold benefits that can come from incorporating nature into how we consider our business. One thing I have to mention, the panel I was moderating immediately before this one was climate and health nexus. We ended up talking about the subject that is really the subject of this panel. And of course, for example, you mentioned employees from a social perspective, but of course there is an important health dimension.
Absolutely.
To it, to societies and costs associated with it, real costs to businesses and governments as well. So a terrific introduction. Thank you very much. I want to turn to you, Minister. How important is natural capital in the conversation on growth and sustainable development in Sri Lanka?
Well, first of all, I'm privileged to be part of this esteemed panel. See, as far as Sri Lanka is concerned, I'm not too sure how many people here or even in the panel have been to Sri Lanka, but for those who have been, they understand how rich in diversity Sri Lanka is. You've got 65,610 square kilometers of just biodiversity, and you know, we're blessed in that sense to be part of a country like that. But in terms of natural capital, the current president, who was the prime minister then in 2017, he had passed a Sustainable Development Act, and that act basically created a council, the Sustainable Development Council, which ensured that all ministries, departments, enterprises of the state give importance to social and environment factors, including natural capital. And along with that, I think currently what we are pursuing is we have come up with a blue-green economy blueprint, which would also make sure, which would also ensure the protection of our natural capital, along with parallel economic development. It basically says more or less all new development projects which are coming into the country, it could be a foreign direct investment or it could be a localized development project, they all must take natural capital into account. And I think one more thing that must be recognized is that we've also come up with a plan on issuing green and blue bonds. And these green and blue bonds, we've targeted three particular sectors. One is renewable energy projects. And along with renewable energy, we are also looking at energy saving and carbon reduction projects. And lastly, forest and marine conservation. So when I say sustainable natural capital is crucial to Sri Lanka's sustainable development, you know, it's not just in words, we've done it through actions. And this particular act has in fact strengthened it.
Thank you very much. This is a really impressive example of exactly as you just said just now, actions speaking louder than words, moving beyond words. A great example of leadership from the government. And when you started speaking, you emphasized the natural wealth of Sri Lanka. So one of the things that I hope we'll come back to in this conversation is the fact that when we take nature into the equation, suddenly the perception of which part of the world is wealthy and which nation is wealthy begins to be recharted and rebalanced, right, depending on what we appreciate. So thank you for these examples. Mr. Song, I want to turn to you. In my introduction and in the words of others, we acknowledge the fact that China has pioneered in many ways in development of new ways of measuring growth and prosperity. Can you help us understand a little bit more about China's ecosystem product value realization mechanism? How is this related to natural capital?
Hello.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. And I'm very happy to be invited. Actually, the EPVR is the concept created by China. In 2017, we initially stated this concept. And after about 7 years' effort, we have basically established the EPVR policy framework. Okay, here is the brief introduction of this concept, and also I will be elaborate on my understanding of it. So we believe there are several layers of the EPVR. First of all, what is the ecosystem products? So first of all, we know the natural ecosystem can provide us with some physical products and intangible services for the consumers. And we call them all, in a general idea, ecosystem product. So how can we understand it? Every day, every one of us is enjoying the convenience of the nature, but maybe we never think about what we need to pay for them. We are enjoying all these conditions for free. Maybe until one day, when we are drinking the clear water and when we are no longer drinking the clear water and breathing the clear air, we might able to think of this value that we need to pay for it. So this is how we give value to the ecosystem product. But what is the realization of the value? Maybe first of all, we know there is the value. However, we know this value is very extrinsic. It is difficult for us to translate the value into our balance sheet, into the monetary currencies. So this might be difficult. So now we have three categories of the ecosystem product. First of all, some physical elements, for example, timber, the herbs, and so on. And second category, it's some service that can regulate our environment, for example, the ocean, the carbon sink, and so on. The third one is the cultural service. For example, forest provides us with some well-being service that can give us some entertainment, some tourism, that enjoying the close contact with the nature. So from the three categories perspective, for the physical materials in our existing market, we can translate its value into our market capitals and so on. But for the service and for the cultural element of the product, it is not easy for us to translate their values. And this is what the EPBR is for, that the government is establishing a mechanism to translate the values of those products. So this is what we need to solve, and that is how we help to realize the value of the ecosystem product. And we also talk about a mechanism here, because we hope that with this initial framework of policies, we can create a mechanism of realization. So first of all, we have the surveying and the research and evaluation and preservation, as well as the promotion of the value for ecosystem product. So with all these steps that constitute the framework of this realization system. Of course, this is only in the pilot stage. We have some successful cases. However, we still have some challenges that we need to solve.
Much. This was incredibly useful, some wonderful examples when you spoke about different categories. You, for example, gave example of a forest, and in my previous session, somebody one of my panelists, descriptively put the reality that we all face, that today we find ourselves in a world where a dead tree is worth more than a live one, and clearly we need to adjust for that, which is EPVR is one of the ways. I also really appreciated your final comments about the mechanism, which of course start with surveying, research. All of that feeds into evaluation and measurement, which are of course so critical. Thank you for these examples.
I actually would like to stay with you, if I may, because very related to this is, of course, the concept of gross ecosystem product. How is this adopted as an indicator? Can you give us a bit of a comparison between EPVR and GEP?
Just now, I've mentioned three categories of the products. Some of them can be realized with market mechanism. Some of them need the help of the government. For example, for the service category, we combine the role of market and government. For example, at the national level, we establish the eco makeup mechanism. For example, the makeup for the forest ecosystem, we divide the forest in China into the charity forest and commercial forest. So we provide some subsidies to the charity part of the forest so that those people who live on logging the forest can receive those subsidies and stop or minimizing their loggings of the forest. And also we provide some help to the vulnerable, equally vulnerable places or regions in China, according to the administrative regions. And for those regions, some of the industries, for example, with high pollutions, cannot be established there. And of course, for those regions, they give up some of the opportunities for industrial development. And therefore, the government also provide them some kind of subsidies. So this is actually the government behavior that we are making some experiment or trying some measures. And with those, we hope to motivate the awareness or the idea of sustainability of people who live there or who work there. But still, we're at the initial stage when implementing this mechanism. But in our next step, just as you mentioned, the concept of GEP, actually we have we have made some studies on the concept of the GEP, and we work out some calculation systems of the GEP and also the value for forest and so on. And what we are trying to do is to link the values of ecosystem product and the GEP. So when we have the numbers, we will be able to use those numbers to match the subsidies. Because if you are giving money to someone, you need to have a number. You need to establish a standard. And that is why we are connecting the two concepts.
That was incredibly helpful. And I particularly enjoyed your comment at the beginning of this statement when you explained that, some aspects of EVPR or GEP will require by themselves can rely on market mechanisms, but other require government help. And that sort of brings me back to what the minister was saying earlier about the leadership in Sri Lanka, the importance of leadership from the very top. And in fact, I want to come back to you, Minister, if I may, since we started talking about gross ecosystem product. In the context of Sri Lanka, has natural capital accounting helped policy making? And do you have a sense that in the context of Sri Lanka, GEP complements GDP well? Is it possible to say?
I'm going to come clean. We have not adopted natural capital accounting methods to Sri Lanka, but I should clarify. I think as far as Sri Lanka goes, the central bank, they've come up with several policy initiatives to get the data into account. And one of that is the issuance of the green finance taxonomy classification. Mm-hmm. And this was done last year, actually. It's a classification system that, you know, defines and specifies categories and activities that are environmentally sustainable. So this, more or less, there is, you know, there's a saying that there's no one way to cook an egg, right? So regardless of us not adopting natural capital accounting methods, we still believe that at the end of the day, data is key. And when we do have data, what we do with the data post-analysis is what results in us protecting our natural capital. So in fact, the central bank's green finance initiatives, it's been proven that it's supported our, you know, policies in relation to natural capital protection. Specifically, one of the main things that we have focused on is we've ensured that all departments, as I mentioned earlier, must conduct a social and environmental audit. And only upon the completion of that do we actually proceed. And apart from that, I think I should also mention that I am the Minister for Water Supply. And initially when I had taken over the ministry, I was quite shocked to find out, you know, the level of exploitation of natural capital in providing drinking water. Now, drinking water is essential, but at the same time, that doesn't mean you can just, you know, destroy whatever resources you have. And, you know, there's always a balance, and that balance can be achieved through political will and conviction. So, in fact, what we did is, along with assistance from the Asian Development Bank,
That's it, folks. Tune in for another round of Biotech Beat, same time next week.
Did you know that New Leaf Link offers day programming for adults with developmental disabilities? We serve families in Kingston and to Frontenac. Our program focuses on arts, healthy living, and community connections, including summer camp. New Leaf Link's caring staff and talented instructors provide a place for everyone.